Welcome to The Walrus and the Carpenter. My name is Jason Alligott. I'm the teaching pastor of Fellowship Bible Church in Peoria, Illinois. And with me, as always, is Gary Geer, pastor of Calvary Baptist Bible Church, also in Peoria. Gary, my question for you today, as I always open with some sort of a question, typically, how are you doing? But you recently went to go see a popular movie, Godzilla versus King Kong.
King Kong. Yes.
And I haven't heard your thoughts.
It was awesome.
Give us 30 seconds.
It was really, 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 really awesome. Because
I love that. It was like a Siskel and Ebert review. Thank you so much.
When you put a big gorilla in with a big lizard, and one of them shooting fire, and one's carrying an axe, and then you put a robot Godzilla in there.
Oh,
you know what? I don't know why it wasn't up for an Oscar. I don't get it.
Yeah,
and I actually saw Minari and liked it very much.
I
would say this is better than Minari. In fact, I would put the family Minari against King Kong and Godzilla, and I'm wondering who would win.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds like something Peter Jackson might do.
True, but those Koreans are a cunning lot, and I can see them taking out Godzilla.
There you go.
They would be able to do it.
Hey, speaking of Oscar winners, I had not seen Jojo Rabbit until last week.
I've not seen that. Is that any good?
Oh, man, I thought it was fantastic here. I think you would really enjoy it. I'm a huge Taika fan, though. I don't know if
Taika, I can take him in small voice. Although, what was the one I saw? Of the Wilder Lost. Oh, what was the one? Beasts of the Wilder Lost with Sam Neill.
Okay, I haven't seen that either. So,
it's one I've wanted to see, but dark humor with Nazis, I struggle with. I don't think it's wrong because
you're talking about Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah.
It's done so very, very well, and I would love to hear your thoughts on it.
Okay.
In fact, let's watch it together.
Okay.
I think we would have a fun time watching that together.
We can definitely do that.
Let's do that. So today is a unique opportunity for us on The Walrus and the Carpenter in that. I'm serious, man. Now, don't laugh. We are going to be talking about something today that is something near and dear to Gary's heart. And so, in a sense, I am going to be
ramen noodles.
That every college student just perked up. But in a sense, I'm going to be interviewing Gary about something that he and his wife have participated in, and something that I think is so important and crucial for the church to hear. And really, out of any of the stuff that we've ever done, I really hope that more people listen to this than anything else. And we're going to talk about what is known as CASA. And this is not a ministry in the sense of formalized with the church or anything like that. This is actually something that is done through the state and the court system. And but an opportunity for the church, individuals within the church to get involved in such a way that makes a huge impact on, I would say, at least, if not even more so, at least the society, culture, city in which someone lives. And so, Gary, explain to us, because I've already used this term CASA, what does that stand for and what does a CASA do?
Well, thank you, Jason, first of all. And this was not my idea, by the way, just letting the audience know. CASA is a court-appointed special advocate. It started, I wanted to say, back in Seattle, back in 77, they had so many foster kids in the system and not enough workers for caseworkers to handle each situation well. A judge recommended that, hey, maybe we got some volunteers to help out these kids. And it just started to build from there over the years. If I were to summarize what CASA does, it is a volunteer network in which we are assigned difficult and at-risk foster care situations, and we advocate for the child very specifically. As I sit there and tell my kids, who I'm assigned to as CASA, as I tell them, you are my client. I don't work for the state. I don't work for DCFS. I don't work for the justice system. I work for you. And I am here to help you with what you need. Mm-hmm. And basically it is working in those situations. Joy and I think have done it now for about 4 years. 4 years, if I remember correctly. And we did this as a spinoff of foster care. We did foster care for several years. And then we ended up, because of health issues on my part, we just couldn't do foster care the way that we did. And I heard about CASA during jury duty, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And I called and asked, and we've been doing it ever since. Joy joined me about a year later.
Okay.
I started first, went through the training, was assigned some kids, and then we went into a year later and just started going.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned real briefly there, Gary, about entering into this. First of all, you heard it during jury duty, which I have also. The CASA folks come in and during jury duty pass out pamphlets, and I think most people unfortunately are not paying attention. But you also said that you entered into this in a sense through fostering,
right?
And so, how has your involvement in foster care helped give you a view of the system and why CASA is so important?
I will look at this from two angles. I'll look at this from a theological, actually make it three angles, a theological, sociological, and I guess an administrative sense. Theologically, if I live in a sin-cursed world, and those in the bottom class are going to, and I'm not speaking so much about race as I'm about class. Those who are mm-hmm. afflicted by various sorts of addictions, those who are afflicted by abuse, and I think drug addiction is very much tied into the whole class issue. Mm-hmm. Some sort of addiction there, and you see children who are basically victimized through that.
Sure.
I think about every kid that we've had have been victimized in some way. And one child telling me, I like you. You don't push in like and you don't punch me in the stomach like my father did.
Mm.
And this is a kid who's 9 years old at the time. And this child wasn't in any way exaggerating the situation.
Sure.
It is one of those things, Jason, and I try to wrap my mind around, and I should write this out and think about it, but I really do believe that there are issues of I don't know what you would call it, systemic affliction.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe be a good way to put it. And it creates a self-perpetuating culture
mm-hmm.
that goes from generation to generation to generation. And I very much believe in the preaching of God's word. You know that. You know, I believe in the teaching of God's word.
Yeah.
But we cannot break the cycle unless we enter into it.
Yeah.
And as believers, and I still think of my son, Garrison, and he is not the most emotional person, but when we first started going, looking at foster care, and we were discussing it, and we were asking the kids what they thought of it, and they'll give us our thoughts, and we asked Garrison, because he's very quiet, and he doesn't normally respond to anything, but Joy asked, she goes, well, what do you think about foster care? And he looked at her and said, why is this even a question?
Mm.
And she said, what do you mean? He goes, we have a house, we have a stable family, we have resources. What reason do we have not to do this?
That's so good.
And then he went back to his computer. But that sense of understanding that we do live in a broken world, and as mm-hmm. believers, mm-hmm. if we want to see things changed as we deal with people, again, dealing with addiction issues and abuse issues,
mm-hmm.
and those two tie together, as believers, we have to intentionally enter into those situations, take on, I'm going to use the term, the burden of those relationships,
yeah,
and minister to them knowing that it isn't always going to be the happy ending that we want, mm-hmm. but it's still absolutely necessary.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's so good that you brought up the class versus race or ethnicity type idea, because this applies no matter if you're in the city, as Gary and I minister within the city limits of Peoria, and we see this a little more maybe on the surface, but this is true in rural areas. This is true no matter where we are, that there are children in the system who need advocates, or if possible, you know, foster care, some way to step into, like you said, and bear the burden.
Right. Right. Now, I mean, looking at it theologically, so there is something where I think the believer is required to be salt and light. Mm-hmm. And I would also believe, I guess, sociologically, the need for something like that. If we see values handed down from generation to generation, and those values are either totally absent because the parents are not there, or they have been warped because of addiction and the abuse issues.
Right.
We are looking. I mean, there's a big reason why our society is struggling with things more and more. Part of it is, of course, the abandonment of accountability to a creator God. That's one big part. But I think also our disdain for our children, and I do believe the term disdain. I don't know how else to talk about a culture that says I will kill my child if they are inconvenient. Mm-hmm. That sits there and says that my addiction or even if a child gets in the way of my enjoying myself, then right. I'm going to refuse to have children.
Right, sure.
And the child cannot get in the way of my plans for the future.
Mm-hmm.
I know we think we love kids more than ever, but I would argue the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Well, even in what some would call loving children is letting them indulge in their sinfulness or their, you know, immaturity or something along those lines, rather than instructing to a certain degree or of, you know, whatever.
Right.
I mean, in probably most cases where you're dealing with these kind of things in CASA, it's children who've just been left to themselves mainly.
Yes, I would say, and that's actually pretty difficult to address on some level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the type of things that we do in CASA, going back to the CASA thing,
yeah,
is, in fact, I'll be visiting my kids here in the next day or so. I'll be checking on that their needs are being met. I'm in communication with their caseworker, with my supervisor. I'll be there in court when they go to court. I report to the judge if I see that there's issues that aren't being addressed or being addressed. I've seen it in some of my cases and in my wife's cases more so, that we have found that when we have addressed the judge directly on issues, the judge does a great job, I find, a lot of times. This is one thing that really frustrates me, and I've heard other believers say this before about the big boogeyman that is DCFS,
mm-hmm.
okay, and the various adoption agencies. And this is not my rant, by the way. but you realize that the common caseworker is a new graduate out of college, and they're thrown in, they're given 15 to 20 cases a month, and they're on call, and they're dealing with this. And on an average, this is anecdotally, usually a caseworker lasts a year or two, if
sure.
even that, and they're burnout.
Yeah.
And while I don't always agree with DCFS,
mm-hmm.
I know they're not trying to hurt the kids.
Sure.
Yeah. And to make them
they're overwhelmed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, to not see them as the enemy.
Right.
Or as someone, again, I don't necessarily agree with them. They're not coming from a Christ-centered view of the universe, but they want what's best for the kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're a bureaucracy, so bureaucracies screw up.
Yeah.
It's just the nature. But about everyone I've run into have had try on some level to deal with these kids, and our job is to help the case, is to help the caseworker, especially to help the kids. Sometimes that means pushing back against the caseworker to say, hey, you forgot about this. You said we did this. Can we get an IEP going? Or how about their medical card? My wife has the spiritual gift of being very obnoxious about this in a very sweet way.
Yes.
And she does a great job advocating for her children. No, you don't want to mess with my wife when it comes to her kids.
So let me just, for a real brief, maybe 30 seconds here, mention something, and I think you would agree with this, and then I want to ask you a question and tell me if you disagree with this. In general, we would say the church gathers to be focused on worship. The church gathers to be equipped for the work of ministry amongst the saints and to scatter, to go into our communities to proclaim the gospel. Mm-hmm. We would say that this is a subset of the greatest commandments, loving our God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, loving our neighbor as ourself. When we talk about loving our neighbor as ourself, as grounded on loving God, we are not saying a person or an individual. First of all, we're not saying that a church as an organization has to get involved in certain things or they're not doing it right.
No, in fact, I think that's very unhelpful.
Yeah, they might get involved in certain things that they can do well, soup kitchens or things like that.
But that's more the exception than the rule.
Right, but what we are saying is that as we as Christians go into our community, whatever that may look like, where we have been gifted and have passions for certain things, and sometimes those passions are cultivated by conversations like this.
Right.
We go and, I mean, essentially, for lack of better terms, we get off our duff and we do something.
Right. Right.
And it may or may not be this.
Right. Yes. But I would. Yeah. I would say this, and especially, I'm so frustrated with the whole woke conversation because on one hand, I really do think we have serious class and racial issues.
That's right.
And I hear a lot of pastors talking about it, a lot of Christians, and I don't see any of them doing anything.
Amen, brother.
Period.
You're almost bringing tears to my eyes, man.
Nothing. Yep. I mean, it is. And you can talk all you want. You can preach all of you want, but to the point.
On either side of the issue.
Right.
Either side of the issue.
And what it takes, and this is the whole difficult part, is us entering into the world of the people. And by the way, I think it's more helpful to look at it as class as opposed to race, because I've had kids from different races, but they face the same exact problems.
Right, exactly.
Within at that point. But it is very messy, it is very ugly, and it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's a great deal of joy in it at the same time, but look at your average your average congregant. They work very hard in making sure that their kids are safe, that their kids are well educated, but there's nothing really beyond that. In fact, they will actually move the whole family somewhere where they think is safer for the family.
Right. Yeah.
And I say this as a father of parents. Now, something that you said earlier, and I want to articulate a little bit more, I think it's the role of the church to equip the people to proclaim Christ, but also in proclaiming Christ to do things. Now,
yes, amen.
The whole St. Francis as Assisi thing, you know, share the gospel, possible use words. Well,
right.
that's what we call a load of crap theologically.
Right. Which he never really said.
No, yeah. which he didn't say, which isn't true. And we need to proclaim Christ, and mm-hmm. we need to do things that are meet with that.
It's the whole James thing.
Right? Yes.
It's the whole James thing. What good does it do to say to your brother, be warm, be filled? You know, it doesn't do anything. You have to feed them. You have to warm them. We're not talking about social programs in and of themselves alone.
No.
Right? I mean, we're looking for gospel opportunities in the midst of CASA or whatever. So the point of why I say that is because at the end of this podcast, you may or may not be interested in doing CASA, but the point that Gary is trying to make, and that I'm hopefully coming alongside of him trying to make, is that we cannot sit on our behinds and say we're glorifying God in our justification when there's no fruit of that in our lives.
I mean, Excellent point. I mean, you can sit there and watch Fox News all day, or scroll through Twitter,
right?
Or you can go down and become part of a literacy program,
mm-hmm.
or you know, you could. I mean, CASA, of course. There, mm-hmm. there's all sorts of opportunities.
Local rescue missions.
Yes,
all kinds of things.
You can do any of these things and step into.
Right.
And I know people give Piper a hard pass for this. But his idea about coming to God with a handful of seashells,
mm-hmm.
his illustration from what book was that? From?
Don't Waste Your Life.
Yeah, Don't Waste Your Life.
Yeah.
I think there's a very real sense where our generation is wasting our life because we live for retirement, and then once we get to retirement, we build a little comfortable home for us, and mm-hmm. we volunteer 2 hours a week, and we think that we're doing what's good for us, pat, pat, pat.
And so that's the other side of this, right? And I do have a thing I want to drive to here in a second, but we think that so when I say go to the rescue mission, it's not just checking the box, right?
Yes.
It's getting to know those guys, getting to know the staff, getting to know who are the regulars here, who can I minister to, who can come be a part of my church, or, you know, something along those lines. Or, you know, getting your feet dirty in the world of CASA and foster care, and like you said, there's pain and there's in all of these things, there's pain and there's grief, and you end up spending yourself a great amount of your energy and emotions in these things, and at the end of the day, you get nothing for it.
Yes, yes.
As far as any sort of pat on the back or remuneration or anything like that. And guess what? That's okay.
Yes.
That's not the reason we do it.
Well, no, it isn't. But there is something and this is going to sound kind of odd, but I think back to Matthew 6 verses 1 through 4 and other mm-hmm. areas like that. There is this, a very real sense that when we dive into these things and we do them, we know that our Father's pleased.
That's right. Yeah.
And to know that he's pleased.
Yeah.
You know, no one else knows about it. No one else knows about the various conversations.
Right.
And I think this is part of American culture. We worship at the altar of capitalism.
Yeah.
And what we do unconsciously is we look at people at lower class, well, they failed capitalism, so they're losers.
Right, right.
So I'm not going to grace them.
Yeah, why can't they pull themselves up by their own bootstraps and get a business started? Well, there are reasons, right? There are real reasons.
There are reasons, and some of them now, some of the conversations that I've had with kids, and we have to come to terms with this, that we've had with kids who are 18, 19, 20 years old. I've had with them, I'm like, hey, you can get a job and do this or that. And I've had them tell me, well, the government's going to pay me this much.
Mm-hmm.
And because the government's going to pay me this much just for existing, I don't want your job. Mm-hmm. I don't want to work. I have mm-hmm. no reason for any of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you have to come to terms with that because this is something that you've been putting in your own kid for the last 18 years.
Right.
And
you're trying in 2 months to instill it in another kid.
In some 19, 20-year-old. I mean, even when he's not your the person you're working for.
Yeah.
And it is that recognition there. And that there's a frustrating conversation, but it stretches you. And it really, I tell you what, it really drives you to prayer. It really does.
Yeah.
Because you're asking God to change the hearts and minds of these kids.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, we have about 5 minutes left here. Okay. I want to ask you what—
Wipe the phone off my mouth.
Yeah. What does a CASA do? In other words, give me kind of the rundown from start to finish, if you will.
Basically, what we would do is we have to lay eyes on the kids at least once a month. Now, it depends on the situation.
No, let me back you up. Start with, how do you get assigned?
Oh, well—
And then walk us through.
You go through all the training. It takes a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then you talk to your supervisor. And the neat thing about CASA is they're not going to put you with someone you're comfortable with. Like one of the things I said, hey, please don't put me with a newborn baby.
Mm-hmm.
In fact,
they just communicate so poorly. It's hard to know what they want.
It is. they actually, my wife and I, they tend to give us teenagers.
Sure.
Because we go along with teens. So what they'll do is they'll say, okay, you know, here's a case. They'll have us come in and they'll ask us, this is the type of case that we're looking at. Are you interested? You usually only have 1 to 2 cases depending upon your time because they don't want to burn out volunteers and plus mm-hmm. just time management. Mm-hmm. And you go in and then you actually see the actual case file. You read through everything. You sign off on it. And these are court documents.
Yep.
If you agree, then you are actually made an officer of the court.
Okay.
And you're signed off and the judge signs you off as an officer of the court. And that piece of paper means, like, for instance, that what I do is I go to school. For instance, with some of my kids, every 6 months I'd go to the school, talk to the teachers. How is the kid doing in class? I see the kids at least monthly. Mm-hmm. Some of the kids, it's more than monthly, depending on the situation. Sometimes it's like, hey, you know, how are you doing, dropping by? Other times, because of things going on in the family, you're constantly in contact. You're constantly reaching out. You're seeing what's happening. But it's at least monthly, and then you're also communicating with the caseworker. For instance, let's say that you see the kids having problems in school, and you talk to the teacher, and it's like, hey, you know, this is more than just a problem at home. So right. Then you would contact the caseworker. Hey, have we done an IEP, which is a special thing for education? And they're mm-hmm. like, no, we haven't done one yet. And so you start pushing on that. Hey, can we get this done? And you make sure that it's coordinated and it's done. And then you're there for the IEP. And then you talk through and you represent the kids' interests. There's been several times, like with teachers and other situations, I've been the only one there representing the kid at that point. Mm. It's rare, but it happens. And you're there to stand in for the kid, to speak for the kid, and to make sure the kid's needs are actually being met.
Yeah, it's good, man.
So
it's good. Have you done your rant yet?
I think I've done a few. I think my big ones, and brothers and sisters in Christ, I say this in love. Jesus did not save you to sit on your butt.
Yeah.
All right. Please. There's so much to be done around you. Please, please do something with it.
Yeah. And Gary, if we could put a form on the website that would leave you some anonymity for people getting in touch with you, but if people are interested and we were able to put a form on there to contact you, could they do that? If they're like, how do I do this?
They could. They can reach out to me personally. Also, I can put the link for the Peoria CASA website on there.
Good. So each county has its own representatives in that regard.
Yes, court district. For instance, we cover 3 counties right now.
Oh, you do? Okay.
We covered Woodford, Peoria, and Tazewell.
Okay. So that's good to know as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. If you were to just kind of summarize this for the Christian in a verse or a theological thought, how would you do that? And we'll kind of close out our time with that.
You know what? This is going to sound kind of odd, but it would be with James, where he talks about ministering to the orphan and the widow.
Mm-hmm.
I look at these kids as kind of like orphans. They have foster parents, but they don't have any power, and they've been victimized. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so victimized, destitute.
Yes,
no one really fighting for them.
Yes,
and that's where we stand then.
And to be honest, a lot of foster kids aren't very nice kids either.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get raised in a crappy situation and turn to be, you know, just this beautiful blossom.
Sweet. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, man, that's really, really helpful, Gary. Well, if you have any questions or would like to reach out to us through the website, you can wallcarpradio.wordpress.com, or you can reach us at facebook.com/wallcarpradio. If you're going to say anything in those venues, do it particularly to the episode where it's been posted, twitter.com/wallcarpradio as well. We would love to hear from you. Perhaps some of you are involved in ministries that are similar to this, and you can help us think about other ways in which we can minister in our community. We really need to see this as opportunities for proclaiming the gospel. These are avenues where we can love our neighbor, and at the same time give opportunity for proclaiming the gospel. Well, until next time, we'll see you then.
God bless.